Good morning.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Hi there.
Who are you?
It's Dave White of Talkin' Television.
What do you want?
I want to invite you to be a guest on my program.
Don't be ridiculous.
I understood you liked my program.
Wrong.
Don't you listen to KSAV?
Negative.
I can help you get reelected.
Come on, don't bullshit me.
Isn't there anything I can give you to get you on my show?
Your clothes. Give them to me.
I gotta go now, Arnold.
Goodbye.
On this show, you know,
I mean,
for re-election, it's hard work, folks. Talking Television with Dave White on the air once again, and even though we did not get Arnie for tonight, or I think for any other night, kind of based on the discussion, we do have a terrific guest coming up tonight, Don Collier, and he will be with us in about 20 minutes. With me right now, right this minute, is America's guru himself, actually on the show 2 weeks in a row now, Tim Carmody. Hi, Timmy.
Contract's coming up for renewal.
Yeah, I knew it must be something like that. If you would like to be on the program, you can do so by phone, 800-407-KSAV, or by email, and that is talk@ksav.org. Last week, that was a fun show. I was listening to that yesterday. And that had me laughing again. Wright King was our guest last week, and if you missed it, folks, go to the archives and listen to that one, because Wright was hilarious, didn't you think so, Tim?
Excellent. He was a bundle of laughs. I liked the guy.
And it's not over completely yet, because I don't know how this happened, but I'm sure that you're responsible for it, Tim. Last week, a couple of emails were dated in plenty of time, like around 8:30 Pacific, but they did not arrive for me to ask Wright about them. One was from the Garrison Apparatus, and he asked about Mr. King's experiences working with Dennis Weaver in McCloud and Twilight Zone, and the president of my fan club here, Chicago Bill, asked about that Twilight Zone episode, and also about a movie called Missiles of October. Now, I don't like to let my audience members down, so I got a hold of Wright again during the week, and he very graciously took the time out to respond to those two questions. So we'll finish up this, what started on last week's program. Broadcast engineer, could we have track number one, please?
Well, proving that you just can't get too much of a good thing, I'm on the phone again with last week's guest, Wright King. Wright, I haven't talked to you for days. I've missed you.
I miss you guys, too. I thought you'd never call.
Oh, yeah. You've just been sitting there waiting, haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay. My reason for calling is I got a couple of late emails from last week, and okay. I like to give my listeners, you know, when they ask the questions, I don't know why these were late coming in. They sent them on time. But anyway, we'll catch up now.
Well, I'll try.
The first one is from Garrison, and his question is also part of the second person, who was Bill from Chicago. Both of them ask about your experiences working with the just recently deceased Dennis Weaver. Garrison says in both McCloud and Twilight Zone. Let's talk about Twilight Zone first. You remember that?
Yes, I remember that. Shadow play with Dennis and Harry Towns was in that, too. And, we were just friends. We were very, very good friends over the years. He had three boys, and we had three boys. And at one time, he put us all in one scene together, all six of them, with me, the father, the harassed father, on Gunsmoke. It was the first one he directed.
Oh, that Dennis Weaver directed?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Wow. So you had other working with him besides McCloud and Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah. I did a lot of Gunsmokes with him.
And got that's right. That's where he got his start, is Chester
Good. Yeah,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bill also asked about, I guess this was a movie, Missiles of October.
Yeah, uh-huh. That was a movie.
That was about what, the Kennedy, the Cuban Missile Crisis?
That was the Cuban Missile Crisis.
What was your part in that?
Senator Russell.
Oh, Richard Russell of Georgia.
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, who played the... Who, you know, Bill alludes to this, too. There were... They chose actors that had great resemblance to the part. I was trying to remember, who played John Kennedy in that? God, I should remember. He had
a series, and he's a very good actor.
Yeah, and he looked... he really looked the
part
out well.
Yeah, he had a good attitude that way, too.
Didn't look like Richard Russell. Richard Russell was a bald-headed guy, wasn't
no,
he?
No, don't look a thing like him.
No, okay.
No, not a thing. So I just liked him. I mean, he was a good... He was a good senator.
Did you meet him?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So sometimes I wondered if you ever came in
no,
contact.
No, in this case, no.
I kind of thought...
I played Bobby Kennedy in something.
You did that part as well?
I played Bobby Kennedy.
You look a lot like him.
And yeah, in a Rod Serling thing called Rank and File. It was a studio, not a Studio One, but a Playhouse 90.
Oh, excellent. I was going to say that maybe they chose you, maybe they went to Richard Russell, and he said, he knew how he looked, Senator Russell looked, and he said, oh, look, there's that good-looking guy, Wright King. Have him play me. We look very similar. Huh? That's how they, you know, he wants to look.
Well, he was an impressive man to be.
Well, it was fun playing the part.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Wright, listen, we're still laughing about last week's show.
Oh, yeah. I had a very good time. You guys are just great.
Well, I appreciate it, and listen, I appreciate you coming back and answering these questions for these two listeners.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks very much.
Yeah. Okay, so there we've finished up the last week, and incidentally, I think that was William Devane that played that part.
That sounds about Kennedy. Right.
It only took me about 6 days to think of that, so I wanted to be sure and get that in.
Could ask Garrison.
Next week is going to be a special week on KSAB. Next week at 6 o'clock Pacific time, it kicks off with Getting to Know You with Susan McCrae, and Susan's guest is Merlin Olson. I know you're interested in that one, Tim.
That's right. Flowers go out for a long pass.
As a sports aficionado. And next week on Talking Television with Dave White, a program that a lot of listeners have requested, we feature the Jack Webb production Emergency, and the guest will be the series star Randolph Mantooth. And in 2 weeks, on March the 21st, I'm not sure what the program is going to feature that night, Tim, but we're going to be giving away a DVD player. We give away DVDs, we're going to give away something to watch it on. Go to the website, check out the page, the contest page, and find out how to win the DVD. It's so simple, even you could do it, Tim.
I checked it out twice. I even recorded it on my beta.
If you were eligible.
Oh.
We've got a brain buster tonight. You've got one that relates to High Chaparral, since that's what Don Collier is famous for.
He is?
Yes, he is. All right, let's intro the bee buster.
Talkin' Television presents the Brain Buster. Every week we present a television trivia question of diabolical proportions. And now, with this week's baffler, here's America's favorite guru, Tim Carmody.
All right, and Timmy, while we were doing that, here comes an email, just like you said, from Garrison. William Devane played JFK. I beat you to it, Garrison. I beat you to it, Garrison, for once, huh? I got you by at least 35 seconds. Okay.
Okay, now the question is, can the rest of the High Chaparral fans beat Garrison?
Oh, all right.
Now, this brainbuster is in no way disparaging the greatest show ever shown on TV,
okay.
High Chaparral. I want to get that. How's the security outside? Yeah. Okay, here's the question. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, again, I'm not making fun. High Chaparral won only one award. What was it? Who won it? And in what category?
Okay, one award, in other words, I'm not saying it is, but like an Emmy Award or something like that.
Something like that.
Okay, and so for the audience in general, tell me any of those. Tell me what year, either what award, who won it,
and what the category was. Garrison has to tell me all of those things. And maybe the winner's, you know, eye color or whatever, too. Emails only on this, folks. talk@ksav.org if you think you know the answer. And for Westerns, I've got The Lone Ranger. I got a kick out of reading about this, too. And this is a DVD, 6 episodes of The Lone Ranger. And incidentally, Tim, these episodes are the most gripping ever made.
Oh, terrific.
You know how I know that?
Because it says so,
on the label. You kind of got that figured out.
I bet you they have the first episode, too, the one where he became a Lone Ranger.
What was his name? What was the Ranger's name before he became Lone?
Before the Lone?
Well, no, but he was a Texas Ranger, and they thought he got killed. What was his name? Okay, well, maybe
Mr. Lone?
We'll use that. Listen, speaking of DVDs, let's get Bill Groves on with us. So if we could, please.
Talkin' Television takes you now into a very different world. A world where old is new, where past is present, where what was once offered for free is now offered for sale, where recycled costs more than new, where consumers demand the obsolete, where viewers plead for the outdated, for it is the magical world of television released on DVD. And here, with this week's report, is the man who keeps us current on the events of yesteryear, Bill Groves.
Boy, the audience goes wild over that. Bill, welcome back to Talkin' Television.
Thank you very much.
See, I wonder, as long as we're talking the DVDs, and this is we're featuring High Chaparral, here's the program tonight, it has not been released on DVD. There is a petition to have it released. The signature count is at 1,394, of which I am number 728.
It could have been a brainbuster.
And if you want to sign that, if you haven't and you want to, we have a link to it on the KSAV Sponsors and Friends page. All right, Bill, tell us what's new in the old world.
Well, you know, actually, speaking of High Chaparral, before we get away from that, you may remember a couple of weeks ago, my pick of the week was Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Okay.
First part of the first season. Well, as part of that 6 degrees of separation thing, in the first 4 episodes, you have guest appearances by Linda Cristal and Henry Darrow.
Wow.
In 2 different episodes, although Henry Darrow is credited as Henry Delgado.
Okay.
So,
all right. Appreciate you supplying that.
Yeah. Now, as for this week, a bunch of animation this week. We've got volumes 1 and 2 of Baby Looney Tunes, part of that trend of shrinking the classic characters down. Also, the classic Flintstones. We got season 5 this week. Also, the entire series, Scooby-Doo / Dinomutt Hour. I'm sure you've been waiting for that one. And
hold my breath.
Yeah. Now, a couple of underdogs supporting characters. We've got the Best of the Go-Go Gophers and Best of Tennessee Tuxedo, which you may recall featured the voice of the late, great Don Adams.
Right.
In that character. Now, also for kids, we've got sort of a double-dip kind of situation. You know, a couple of months ago or so, they brought out the Best of the Electric Company. Well, this week we've got the Best of the Best of the Electric Company. So, you know, if the first set was stretching your wallet, then, yeah, maybe this one's a little more accommodating. In the sci-fi area, we've got Volume 5.4 of the series Andromeda, starring Kevin Sorbo. They're really putting that one out in dribs and drabs, aren't they?
Yep.
Also, a theme box from Star Trek, the Borg Fan Collective. So I guess we could say resistance is futile, although, I don't know, getting back to the wallet, I can resist fairly easily. Now, we've got the entire series of Walking Tall, starring Bo Svenson, who, as you may recall, did the parts 2 and 3 of the movies, even though Joe Don Baker initiated it in the first film. And finally, my pick of the week, Angie Dickinson, season 1 of Police Woman.
Oh, now we're talking.
That's right. Spun off of Police Story, And the set includes some, it's got a blooper reel on there and some commentaries on certain episodes by Policewoman Pepper herself. So the pick of the week, Policewoman, Season 1.
I can still remember that, you know, with Angie Dickinson mincing down those stairs. I don't know anything about the rest of the show. Earl Holloway was in that show.
Holloman, yeah.
Or was it Holloman?
I'm sorry.
There you go.
I just realized I missed a complete category here. There's several sitcoms. We've got Season 5 of Brady Bunch, Season 2 of The Cosby Show, third season of Hogan's Heroes, and Season 6 of Three's Company.
How many years were those guys in that prison camp anyway?
Longer than the war, I think.
Yeah. Did they know it was over?
I guess, well, they were having such a good time, you know. I mean, Schultz was so entertaining.
He was. What a character.
Yeah.
All right. Does that cover it?
That's my report for this week.
All right. Excellent. With the lot of response on the Brain Busters, and we didn't stump anybody. Let me
does
go through this.
Shot?
You know, we'll give you a chance here, Bill.
Go ahead,
Bill
throw Crow. It out there.
Okay, the High Chaparral won one award, any one of these things. What year, what award, who won it, and what category?
Wow.
They know. I know this is unfair to just, you know, hit this with you.
I'll just guess the year is 67.
All right. Well, at least it was one of the years it was on. We got Susan had the correct answer. Tanya had the correct answer. Garrison had the correct answer. And actually, all of these people got all parts of it. 1970, the Golden Globe, Linda Crystal. Oh, I shouldn't be given this. You're supposed to. And what was the category, Tim?
Well, I certainly hope it was Best Actress in a Drama.
Best Actress in a Drama, that's correct. So everybody got it. Tanya was first in. So Tanya wins the Lone Ranger. And incidentally, Bill, you're familiar with DVDs. This is six of the most gripping episodes ever made.
Hmm. Of the Lone Ranger.
Of the Lone Ranger, that's right. Do you know what the Lone Ranger's name was before he became the Lone Ranger?
That one I know.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
It was John Reed.
There you go,
very
Tim.
Very good.
We were gonna...
Do you know who his great-nephew was?
What, you mean a character?
Yeah.
Lou Reed?
No.
No. His great-nephew was the Green Hornet. Britt Reed.
Oh,
stop.
All right. Listen,
maybe,
on the
maybe
Bill,
it was great-grandnephew, but it's
Bill, you stick around here for a minute.
All right.
On the, we've been doing some website, webpage updates, and on the Talk and Television page, I have an offshoot from that called Dave's Favorite Commercials, and we're adding to that. We've got four or five of them up there right now. Most of them we have played on the program, the audio. And some of these are fun to go and see. Now, I'm going to play the audio for one that is up there, and I believe this first appeared on a Super Bowl. It's a Budweiser commercial. If you know what it's about, you'll you know, recognize what it was when you hear it. It's called Sleigh Ride. Broadcast engineer, let's have track number 3, please.
This is so romantic.
Well, it's about to get a little bit more romantic. A little candlelight.
Oh.
And a little Bud Light.
Mmm.
Do you smell barbecue?
Oh!
Fresh, smooth, real Bud Light.
Do you remember that commercial, Tim?
No, that one got me.
You didn't. Bill, what about you?
No, I thought maybe you were going to throw Spuds McKenzie at it.
Holy smokes. All right, well, then I won't. I thought that was a famous one. Well, okay, you got something to do then. Go to the KSAV webpage, go to Talk and Television and Dave's Favorite Commercials, and you can watch it. It does require a high speed or a broadband in order to download the video, at least in this lifetime. Okay. Next week is going to be Randolph Mantooth on Bill, so of course you'll be here with us. So I just I can't get over promoting that.
Okay.
thanks very much for the report. We're going to bring on our guest. What do we have here? Oh, Brill Cream, Gillette, Blue Blades, important stuff. We'll get Don Collier on, and we'll get some serious talk in television on the other side of the break on Retro Radio.
Are you a no-dab man with dry license hair? Become a one-dab man. One dab of Brill Cream puts life and dry hair and fun in your life. But beware of being a two-dab man. That extra dab makes a man's hair excitingly clean, disturbingly healthy. We refuse to be responsible.
Brill Cream, a little dab will do ya. Or wash out the gas over to ya.
Now buy Brill Cream. Game free. Or girls, buy new Silvercream shampoo. Pull a game free. Present any empty Brill Cream carton or the label from any bottle of Silvercream shampoo at any AMF Magic equipped bowling center and bowl a game free where bowling is cool fun. Offer is good for a limited time only. So buy Brill Cream or Silvercream shampoo now and bowl a game free.
Look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp and listen, mister. How are you fixed for blades? That blade. How are you fixed for blades? You better check. Please make sure you have enough. Cause a worn out blade makes you shaving mighty tough. How are you fixed for blades? Better look. Gillette Blue Blades, I mean.
Make some Kraft macaroni and cheese. Please, please make some Kraft macaroni and cheese. It's nice and cheesy and it's really pretty easy. Please, make some Kraft macaroni and cheese.
When you make Kraft macaroni and cheese dinner, the cheese sauce is so rich and creamy, you know they're going to like it.
So please, make some Kraft macaroni and cheese. Thank you.
All right. I enjoy listening to the music. That was always one of my favorite theme music. If you want to talk to, well, naturally you'd want to talk to Dave White. But if you want to talk to Dave White or Tim Carmody or Don Collier, you can do so now. 800-407-KSAV or email talk@ksav.org. So, Don, welcome to Talkin' Television.
Well, thanks, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm really delighted. I was just commenting to Tim, because we've alluded to this in the past when you were going to be on. I said, you just hear this guy, and he sounds like a cowboy. I mean, I can just, any minute now, I expect you to probably, you know, bust the whiskey bottle over my head or whatever. Like
I'm having a shot of rye now myself.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that. It might be full. Well, a waste of whiskey.
Yeah, if it was an empty bottle.
Empty bottle would be okay.
Don, you've got a long career and a lot of accomplishments and appearances and so on. But tell us to start off with what's new, what's going on, because you're not retired, you're still doing things, you're active.
Well, I'm doing a few things, but mostly I'm retired. I'm 77 years old now. I haven't got that old get up and go like I used to have.
You got up and went.
I got up and went. Yeah.
Well, but you've got something, because you've got a radio program either on or something you're working on. Tell us about that.
We've got me and Fred Imus. You know who Don Imus is?
Sure.
His brother Fred and I've got a little thing going on Sirius Radio. We're kind of co-hosting a couple hours on the weekends called Outlaw Country, and we just do it like a couple of cowboys. That's one little thing. Then we got this.
Is that a syndicated show?
That I think it's going to be. I'm not sure.
Okay,
it's on Sirius. Would it be syndicated?
No, I guess on Sirius. That's just. I guess you wouldn't call it that. But so if people subscribe to Sirius, then they get it. Don, speak up as. The station is asking if you would please
speak
probably
up.
Your phone's a little bit. If you just speak as loud as you could, please.
Okay. You want me to speak up a little more, you say?
Yes, if you would, please.
All right. Then we got that one we're working on called West of the Story. That's about two cowboys who happen to be anywhere in Arizona where something's happening. And that's it's a period radio Western drama. And they happen to be where the OK Corral gunfight takes place and about 80 other situations that happen here in Arizona.
So so this is kind of a what I'm going to say, imaginary characters are going to the scenes of actual events?
Actual events, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then is it contemporary with when the events are taking place?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, their names are Duke Hardaway and Dusty Clark. And old Duke and Dusty just happen to be wherever these things take place.
Ah.
You know, a train robbery or a stagecoach robbery or a bank robbery. They happen to be in the neighborhood and they witness these things.
I've got an email that ties in with that. And this is from Tanya. And Tanya won our quiz tonight, the Guru's Brain Buster. So we'll let her start off with the email questions. First of all, she says, thanks for having Don Collier, or Sam, as she knows. That's a reference, Tim, so you know what's going on, to Sam Butler on High Chaparral.
Thank you. I'll pick that up.
Tanya says, looking at the long list of Don Collier appearances, I noticed that most of them are Westerns. Asking you, Don, did you choose to appear in so many Westerns yourself, or were you offered parts in Westerns because you had the cowboy look? And I certainly, know what she means by that.
I did a few things that were Western, but it seemed like from the moment I started, that's just about all I worked in all through these years.
Did you like that?
Oh, loved it.
Okay. And she said it always seemed as if the cast of the High Chaparral were friends in real life as well. Is this true?
This is true. It was true. Some of them are gone now, of course.
Of course.
But we all got along great, like one big old happy family. And we had our ups and downs. We had to live with our Cameron Mitchells and a few other guys.
Well, okay, I guess that tells some. We had to live with our Cameron Mitchells. Okay.
Well, okay, he was all right, but when he was younger, he was a little wild, and he'd rent a car. He was sloppy. He was a slob. He'd rent a car, and 3 hours after he inhabited that car, there'd be ants crawling around. Oh, my God. What a mess. He was okay. He was just a swab.
Tanya asked if you're still in touch with some of the colleagues from High Chaparral.
I saw Henry Darrell last summer. Bobby Hoy and I still remain close all these years. We're going to be at the Festival of the West next week up in Phoenix.
Oh, that's coming up already. I was going to say in March, but it's March. That's right. So March 16th.
March 16th, a week from, we go up there a week from tomorrow. And Bobby Hoy will be there. Peter Brown, Robert Fuller.
I thought Robert Horton was going to be there.
I think he will be there, yeah.
Okay, and Robert Fuller as well?
And Robert Fuller, I know he's going to be there. He called Bobby and said, good, we'll have our poker game, right? And he said, okay. Yeah, you bet. We'll take his money quickly.
Well, Bob was a guest on Talkin' Television, and he was great. I really had fun talking to him. So anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. That's coming up next week, and these are some of the people that you do, like you say, several are deceased, but that you do still have contact with.
Yeah, me and Bobby stay in touch with each other. That's about all. I saw Henry last summer. Henry Darrell, and I was trying. That's all. Me and Bobby stay close. So Jerry Summer just died 2 or 3 weeks ago. You know, he was on the show the first year with us.
That's right. I remember that, and I didn't make the connection at first. He was on this New York police show, wasn't it?
He was on. He won Dukes of Hazzard. Later on. He
okay.
He was the stunt gaffer on that for 4 or 5 years, however long that lasted.
All right. Now, I had a request here. Tanya says, listening to sound bites of West of the Story on your website. You know, I have to stop right here and talk for a bit, too. Don, you have a terrific website. People that are interested, I guess it's just www.doncollier. I usually just Google it myself.
Yeah, doncollier.com.
Okay. Yeah. And Don Collier, all one word, and a terrific site. You're obviously a computer genius to do that site.
Jenny Shook is the one behind that.
Okay.
On the website.
I brought that up deliberately because I knew you'd get a kick out of it, Tim, when I was talking to Don about doing the program. I said that, well, you know, I'll be in touch with you. You want me to send you an email? And Don said, no, I think you better phone.
Well, he has off days.
The website is just terrific.
And got a lot of hits on that website.
I'll say.
923,000, I think, something like that.
Wow. Well, some of them are certainly me. I've gone there both, to do some research for the show, but also it was just interesting to see. And you were a good-looking young guy.
Well, I was passable, I guess.
So I would encourage people to go and look around on the site, and there's a lot of fun stuff there. But this brings me back. Tanya says, listening to sound bites of West of the Story on your website, I was wondering if you could tell us what radio station the show is playing at the moment and which episodes, if any, are available on CD.
Well, it's not available yet. It's not on the radio yet. We're still developing it.
Okay.
Hopefully we can get it sold to Sirius.
Okay, so that's where you're targeting it for.
Sirius or possibly get it syndicated.
Okay. I think probably the Sirius is easier, but anyway, I know nothing about that.
That's for sure.
Tanya asks, Dave, could you play the theme music for West of the Story? It's really great. And we're going to do that. So by request here, where this is request night on KSAV, let's have broadcast engineer please track number 4.
They came riding from the Northland, horses dry as a bone. Two parts named Duke and Dusty went riding on alone. From the south they came a-riding, pulled up at a played-out mine. Old Duke and Dusty were in two places at one time. These tales are told often of these old saddle pals, overlooking the mountains and dusty old corrals. They live on in the old songs, those tales of hope and glory. Here it is, my friends, the West of the Story. West of the Story. West of the Story.
Welcome to West of the Story.
All right, and there it is. And you know, until you hear the theme played out like that, you don't catch exactly what they mean by West of the Story. I said, Tim, I think it's a combination of Elmer Fudd and Paul Harvey.
And see how wrong you were.
No, I think it is. But anyway, it's a nice theme in the show. That sounds very, very interesting. I hope that catches on and works out for you.
Don't sing it, Dave.
You know, I have some experience with singing theme songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, regular listeners will know that I did the theme song. I sang, what did I do? Oh, Bonanza.
And don't forget Combat.
And Combat, that was where I made my debut, so we might have some surprises here a little later on.
You sang those?
Yeah, see, now Don's curious. Okay, all right,
be the end of the series.
I got an email from Kent McCray. You know, yeah. Kent. He says, do you remember when Bob Lansing guest starred on Chaparral, and he asked John Cannon if Sam Butler could be the marshal in Yuma for 6 months?
I remember that very well.
All right. Now, you're laughing about that. Is there something here that we're not privy to?
Yeah. Well, they set me up for that, those devils. I didn't know what was happening. I got out to set that day. I knew we had that big scene, but I had no dialogue in it, so I wasn't particularly interested. I knew I was going to be sitting on my horse just looking around, you know, listening to everybody else chew the fat. And I'm sitting there on my horse, and all of a sudden, Bob Lansing says that to John Cannon. He says, listen, Big John, he says, I might need somebody down there in Yuma to take over when I leave for a while, for about 6 months. And old John Cannon says, okay, who are you thinking about? He says, I was thinking about old Sam Butler. If he can bam, my ears poked up. You know. Wait a minute, I said to myself, what's going on here? And he, old Bob went on, yeah, I want him down there maybe for about 6 months.
So this was all just ad-lib?
All ad-lib.
All right.
And it just, I was on that horse, you know. Life.
Did you think you had missed something in that script?
And then, yeah. They looked at me and they said, you want to go down there? And I forget what the hell I said. What the hell is going on here, for crying out? I don't want to leave Tucson or High Chaparral. And they all start laughing. They got to be.
Well, that's kind of neat. So everybody was set up with that except, or knew about that except you.
Except me.
All right. Did you pull any of your own little tricks back at them for that?
Oh, you know, we did a lot of that stuff through the years. A lot of it I can't tell, of course.
Okay. But, it was that good, huh?
I can't remember what the hell, any specific things. We sure had a lot of fun with the various things. Old Rudy Acosta was on that show, you know, Rudolfo.
Oh, yes, okay.
And old Rudy liked his beer. And we used to have a running gag going that he had a beer with him usually all the time, even when he was working, even in a scene. You know, he'd have it hidden somewhere, and when the camera went off of him, he'd quickly take a shot of beer and then put it back where he had it hidden, and the camera would come back to him. But we had a gag going. Anything that he touched, like a tree limb or something, he'd look around, see when he was looking, he'd bend it down like he was drinking out of it, you know. He could hide his beer anywhere. And a rifle, you know, and he'd tip that rifle up and take a swallow of beer. Oh, it was funny. We had a lot of gags, a lot of fun. And we got a lot of good work done. It was, well, that was one hell of a series.
Yeah, that we've had you know, discussed this before because it's very popular with my audience. And the scenes you're talking about here, I'm imagining, are the ones that were filmed down in Tucson, out in the desert there, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh. You know, old McRae, Ken McRae, he was the unit manager on that. Later on, he became Mike Landon's producer. But on High Chaparral, he was the unit manager. And he was the one that contacted everybody on location. Dispatched all the trucks. He was just in control of everything. And we had to film a scene where the Indians were going to attack this house with some people in it. And we were hiding up in the hills there. And we were going to come down and rescue them. And the Indians shot flaming arrows into this house, you know, and they caught it on fire. So they Kent located a pretty good old line shack out here in the desert. I forget where it was now, towards Sonoya somewhere. And he talked to the rancher, and he said, listen, we want to rent that line shack of yours for a scene we've got. And we're going to have a fire in it, but it's going to be under control. It'll look like it's burning, but it won't be. I'll get hurt. You know, the Indians will come down with the arrows, and our cowboys will come down and chase the Indians off, and the fire will stop, and everything will be fine. And the rancher says, okay, he says, I value that old house down there. Don't let nothing happen to it. Ken says, no, nothing will happen. We know exactly what we got. Experts down there, the fire experts. And we get down there, and they get it all set up and everything. And we're hiding up there behind the rocks there, and here come the Indians down the hill, whooping and hollering, shooting these flaming arrows, you know, and they hit that house, and the flames start. And Billy Clack says, okay, boys, get down there and get those Indians out of there. So we charge down the hill. And that fire looks a little warm. And the closer we get, we realize that son of a gun's going up in flames.
Under control.
Under control, you bet. It was controlled all right. Out.
So they burned
the whole,
that.
The
they
whole
burned,
damn thing burned
they
down.
They burned the thing down.
Yeah, a new one.
I hope they didn't have to do a retake.
No retakes. It was a one-shot deal.
All right, we're going to take a timeout as well.
Okay.
If you got a question or and you want to talk to Don, email us at talk@ksav.org or you can call 800-407-KSAV. We'll be back real quick and talk some more about other projects and shows that Don has been on Share a Vision Radio.
Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, things go better with Coca-Cola, things go better with Coke. Life is much more fun when you're refreshed.
And Coke refreshes you best.
It's the refreshingness.
Food goes better with, fun goes better with, you go better with Coke.
The real life one puts extra fun in you and everything you do. So things go better with Coca-Cola, things go better with Coke.
Right now, why not let an ice-cold Coke make things go better for you? Cold, crisp, never too sweet. Fun. Food. And people. All need the spirited taste of ice-cold Coke to be really refreshed.
Things go better with Coca-Cola. Things go better with Coke.
There's just one Schlitz, yeah, yeah, nothing else comes near. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer. You like it light with a bit taste too. There's only one brew that will do. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer. Read a gusto in the great light beer Schlitz.
All right, we are back talking television some more. The Virginian. You appeared in The Virginian as well, didn't you, Don?
I think I worked in two of those down through the years.
Yeah, like I say, a long, long list. I want to talk about a show that this may have been. You correct us on, or correct me on this. I think it was your first one, and you were the star in it, The Outlaws.
The Outlaws, that's right. Yeah.
Tell us some about that.
Well, me and Barton McLean and a young fellow named Jack Gaynor. I was the marshal and. Barton was the governor, and old Jack Gaynor was the deputy.
Was Barton McLean Jack Webb's sidekick?
No.
Okay, I got the Bartons mixed up. Okay, I'm sorry, go right ahead.
That was old Harry Morgan, I think.
Well, no, back on the radio days, I thought might have been.
Oh.
But no, because this program was in 1960, wasn't it?
1960, yeah.
Yeah, no, Bart, the one I'm thinking of with Jack Webb was deceased by then, so. Anyway, I'm sorry, go right ahead.
That's all right, yeah, we, Barton was with us the first year, then he left after the first year, and they brought in another deputy, Slim Pickens came in.
Ah, Slim.
He was great. And also Judy Lewis. Judy Lewis was the daughter of Loretta Young and Clark Gable.
Yeah. Tell us, Tim, you were talking about Slim Pickens a little earlier.
Well, he's everybody's favorite kind of sidekick, and when he rode the bomb down in Dr. Strangelove, I think that was quite a different part there.
You know, that was his idea. He talked old Stanley Kubrick into letting him ride that bomb down. He got about 3 weeks extra work out of that thing.
Did he really? What a last great scene when he's Yahoo with a cowboy hat and everything.
That's right, yeah.
Was Slim like that in real life, would you work with?
He was great. He was a real character.
And how did they pick the character's name, Slim? I mean, you had Slim Pickens playing Slim.
His real name was Lewis Lindley, and
I wonder why he changed that.
Yeah, really. What a cowboy name that was.
Well, he was rodeoing, and he was trying to ride Bronx. And one old cowboy says, "If you think you're going to make a living at this riding Bronx, you're looking at some mighty Slim Pickens." old Louis said, "By golly, that's a pretty good name. I think I'll use that."
That's great. That's excellent. Okay, so The Outlaws, Now, this was different, or was taken, but what made it different? It was a different perspective, but what made this different from other Westerns?
Well, it was supposed to be from the outlaw's point of view, and I suppose it kind of was. Those old Westerns, they were good. They were all pretty corny, you know, but they were entertaining. And they tried to do this thing from the outlaw's point of view, and it kind of worked, but...
So you think that theme or that idea just was unworkable?
We were going to go a third season, but Ralph Edwards, who was doing This Is Your Life, was owed an hour of prime time by NBC. And so they decided to cancel our Outlaw show and give him that hour at that time. That was in 1963, I believe it was. So
okay.
60, 61, part of 62.
I could see how it would make it kind of tough. I mean, in from the audience's standpoint, you want to try to paint then the outlaw to be somewhat of a good guy, since you know, if you want the audience to be cheering for him, so to speak. You don't like to see villains win, so that would make it kind of a tough sell.
Well, but we always got the bad guy at the end of the show. You know, they never got away with anything.
Okay, so there wasn't a permanent character as an outlaw then?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Now, since this was, you know, we played the theme from West of the Story, and I wanted to do, we're playing some other theme songs tonight. We played the theme from High Chaparral. We just did Virginian. We're going to do the Waltons later, and another one that you played in Perry Mason's show. Very different. But I want to play the Outlaws theme.
Oh, have you got that?
Oh, yes. Listen, Don, for you, we pull
you
out
it.
All the stops. I've got it for you. And I also found that there were lyrics to that that theme song as well. Now, I couldn't find a version with the lyrics, but here at Talkin' Television, it's no problem for us.
All
we
right.
brought again the KSAV singers, and we put this together. So let's hear the Outlaws theme. It's very quick, 35 seconds. You got to listen close, folks. Broadcast engineer, could we have cut number 2, please?
I was afraid of this, Don.
Outlaws running from the hang rope. Outlaws running from the gun. Outlaws riding through the night trails, hiding from the sun. But there's no use hiding when the law starts riding, and there's no use running when the law starts gunning for the outlaw.
Wow. There it is. Now, Don, maybe in exchange for you being so gracious and being on talk and television, I might be persuaded to allow you to have that for your website.
Well, I'd like that.
Oh,
I've been encouraging him to take up mime.
He would, you know, the why he wants it, Tim. He's hoping he's going to get the only copy in existence
and destroy it.
Yes, and take care of that.
Who was that singing?
That was a local vocalist we have here at KSAV.
Quit his day job.
Very good. We've been encouraging him to do that all the time.
Let's see. I've got some other... Well, look, I better take these emails here. This is from Catherine. Catherine says, ask Don why he was missing from the series, and I believe the series she's referring to is High Chaparral, for several episodes. She said, what special outside projects, if any, were you working on? Do you know which episode she's referring to that you were missing from?
I don't know the episodes, but I know the period of time.
Okay.
That was in the spring and summer of... No, it was in the late summer of 60... No, of 69, I believe it was. I got an offer to do a good part on a picture that Anthony Quinn was doing the lead in. And Sir Carol Reed, the old English director who's dead now, had done... what the hell had he done? Oliver, I think it was, the year before, won an Oscar for it. So they hired him to direct this picture called, it was originally called Nobody Loves a Drunken Indian, but it was released as Flap, and they offered me the part of the foreman that was going to build a road through the Indian land and desecrate their graves, and it was a hell of a script. Warner Brothers didn't publicize it too much. It turned out to be a hell of a good movie. And so I took them. I asked Billy Claxton if I could get off for about 3 months to do this movie. And he said, yeah, go ahead. So I did. Had a good time. It was a good movie. And nothing much ever came of it, Dave.
What was the name of the movie?
Flap.
It was released as Flap. Anthony Quinn's name in the picture was Flapping Eagle.
Oh, okay.
The original name was Nobody Loves a Drunken Indian, but we were over in Santa Fe shooting the picture, and the Indians protested. They didn't like the name of that.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Well, and by the time the picture... So they changed it right then to Flap. By the time that we were done, the Indians wanted to change back. They realized they could get a hell of a lot more mileage out of it as Nobody Loves a Drunken Indian than they could out of Flap.
Yeah. Yeah, well... Sometimes you got to be careful what you wish for, don't you? Yeah, because
right.
You get it. I've got an email here. This is from Rocky. Rocky says, speaking of Sirius satellite radio,
yeah.
I believe it's Channel 63, Outlaw Country.
Outlaw Country, that's it.
Okay, on Sirius satellite radio that Don was talking about, and Rocky comments that's cool because he has Sirius, and he didn't know that you were on there, Don.
We won't start. Until about the 1st of April.
Oh, okay. All right, well, excellent. Well, Rocky, obviously you're listening. So that's going to be around April 1st that you will be able to listen to Don.
Yeah, Fred and I have been recording stuff for it already.
Yeah, there's a lot to getting prepared for that. On one of the Yahoo discussion groups that I'm a member of and that I monitor... called TV Westerns at Yahoo Groups. There have been several postings about your appearance, and one fellow, Michael Dunn, I think it is, posted one that said, I won't be home to hear the program Tuesday night. Will someone note if Bob Hoy was always supposed to be Don's brother on the High Chaparral series? Thanks, Mike. So was that intended, I guess, from the script, or is that something that came about, or do you understand exactly what he means?
Well, that we were brothers right from the pilot on.
Okay.
In fact, Bobby was supposed to be the older brother, but there was a fight that took place or something, and I said something to somebody, and I says, well, you shouldn't pick on my kid brother like that. And then Billy cut the... He says, cut. Hey, print. I said, don't print that. I said, I called Bobby my younger brother. He said, that's all right. From now on, he's your younger brother.
Sometimes it's nice when things will change like that. I've got on the phone, we've got a friend of yours, Kent McRae, who has also been a guest on Talk and Television. You know, I'm going to have a pretty good-sized audience if I can just get all my guests to listen at one time. So let's get
don't
Kent
think.
On. Ken on the talk. Ken, are you there?
Hey, I'm here.
Oh, hi.
Holy
well,
mackerel.
Yeah.
Hey, BD.
Just what's up? Kent, what's up with you?
No, I'm doing good. I'm just listening to Don. When he left the show, he went to do a show called Flapping Eagle.
That's right. Now, you were probably on the phone and couldn't hear it, but Don just relayed that and related
okay.
that story.
Well, I got a lot of stories about Don Collier.
Oh, boy. I got a whole library full of Kent McRae stories.
Maybe this is...
I just called in to tell you that Don Collier was great on Outlaws, Chaparral, Bonanza, and Little House. He's done it all, and he's a great friend and a great actor.
You're a good man, Kent.
Well, you're the best.
He's one of my favorites.
He's just trying to head off those stories.
He must have heard I got some big project coming up. He wants to jump in on it.
Yeah, I want to jump in on those.
I also noticed down that, you know, as long as you're going down the list, Kent, things down here, I guess these are movies, El Dorado, but it was also on Death Valley Days, Branded,
right.
Craft Suspense Theater, Gunsmoke,
quite a lot of Wayne pictures.
I'm sorry, pardon?
He did a lot of Wayne pictures.
Yeah, I've got an email.
Five Card Stud, I think.
Five Card Stud, yeah.
No, good, great movie.
On that one.
I thought Five Card Stud wasn't a John Wayne movie,
no,
was it?
Dean Martin in that.
Yeah,
one.
Dean Martin and Robert Mitchum.
Right.
Oh,
terrific
yeah.
movie.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
What part did you play in that, Dunn?
I forget the character's name. I was...
Rowan the Gold Miner?
Yeah, a miner, yeah. Yeah. And Bobby kills me. Bobby Hoy killed me.
Well,
we'll have to get back at him.
Yeah, good friend.
I killed, let's see, I killed Chuck, Charlie Hayward. Who am I trying to think of?
Can you hear it?
Chuck Hayward.
All right,
hard Chuck Hayward's one of the
hard to keep these victims straight.
Chuck Hayward was their stuntman.
Yeah, I killed him, and Bobby Hoy killed me.
All right, Kent, anything else you wanted to add?
No, I just wanted to tell Don how much I like him.
All right.
He's a great friend.
All Kent, right. Thanks a lot for taking the time to listen and for calling in.
Take care now, Don.
All right, my friend.
We had, when Bob Hoy was on, he had some talking about, he was on primarily, we were talking about stunts and doing stunts, and he mentioned that, you know, on these shows, as a stuntman, you'd go out and you'd shoot a scene where he would be like the cavalry, and then they'd go and shoot the scene where he'd play one of the Indians, and when he watched the film, he noticed that he shot himself.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. Did you do any stunt work?
No. I did all my own riding and most of my own fights, but I never did any stunts I got paid for.
Well, okay. Well, I guess that's what makes it count. Now, Bob mentioned that it wasn't unusual to have these actors or stars in Westerns that couldn't ride a horse. Is that true?
That's true.
You did your own riding. I noticed you mentioned that right away here when we were talking. In fact, Bob had said that these guys couldn't spell horse, much less, mention one. What about on High Chaparral? Did the people that were on there, were they all riders?
You mean the guest people that came in?
Necessarily. The regular cast.
Oh, no. Henry Darrow had to ride a long time before we started the show. So did Cam Mitchell.
Okay.
Mark Slade was pretty good.
I hope he was easier on the horses than the cars, Cam.
No, he wasn't. He was terrible on a horse. He'd wear the horse out. Leif Erickson, he was pretty fair on the horse. Me and Bobby were good hands.
Yeah, obviously Bob had a background in that before.
Yeah, Bob before hell of a horse.
Into acting. Last week my guest was Wright King, and Wright told a story about, I think it was Jack Klugman. Do you remember, Tim?
Yeah, Jack Klugman, scared to death of horses.
Yeah, they came and said from Jack Klugman from New York, and, you know, comes out, and they went to something, and the horse kind of whinnied a little bit. And
Jack head for the hill.
Yeah.
And his underwear, huh?
Yeah, that was about it. So, you know, we see these things, we be in the audience, and, you know, it all just looks so natural, and you just assume that somebody playing the part is naturally doing the riding or whatever. Now, you said did your own fight scenes, too. Was that unusual?
Well, no, not really, because any actor that's going to be involved in a fight, that he's not going to do, they have a stunt guy do it, and they'll do close-ups with the actor, and just, you know, to have him take a few punches and throw a few things like that. But the stunt guys will do most of the work. But and they doubled me quite a bit in the fights. I would do a few of the close-ups and things, but they don't want to take a chance really getting their actors hurt.
Yeah, that was something that Bob mentioned as far as with the doing the stunts and so on.
Yeah.
Was if the star goes down or whatever, you've got no program.
What was the most physical type thing you did, Don? Was it in the horses, the fight scenes, or, I mean, what did you find the toughest physically?
It was the horsebacking, especially down here in Tucson. You know, we would shoot on purpose in the summertime because we had a lot more daylight, and we'd start shooting when the sun came up.
Must have got hot.
Oh, man, it was boiling. In fact, when I tried my outfit on at Western Costume over in Hollywood, I looked like $1 million. I had on heavy pants. I had on the shaps, the leather shaps. I had on a miner shirt underneath my cowhide leather shirt. I just looked like $1 million in front of those mirrors, you know. But I got down here in this desert and found out that the cowhide and leather wasn't the best thing to wear.
Yeah.
But you're used to it. Especially if you're getting paid, you get it done.
I get a kick out of, these so-called today country and western singers that, they're rock and rollers with cowboy hats.
Yeah.
And these, you know, you talk about authentic-looking cowboys. I don't know about that. We're going to take a break. What do we got coming up. Oh, Q-tips. These are good. Big League Q. Colgate toothpaste. Important stuff. And then I've got a few more emails coming in that we'll ask Don about. And maybe talk to him about an appearance he made on the Perry Mason show. We'll do all that.
All right.
When Talkin' Television continues on Retro Radio.
It's so handy having Q-tips round the house. You can do so much with Q-tips round the house. Your pets deserve loving care. Clean their ears, eyes, and paws with gentle Q-tips cotton swabs. It's so handy having Q-tips round the house. You can do so much with Q-tips. For hygienic first aid, sterilized Q-tips are the safe way to apply ointments and antiseptics to little cuts and scrapes right on the spot. And Q-tips have a soothing touch. They're soft as pussy willows. You can do so much with Q-tips for your baby. Q-tips were first made for babies and have been used by doctors, nurses, and mothers for over a quarter of a century. Now modern families find so many uses for Q-tips, they keep a box in every room. It's so handy having Q-tips round the house.
You're in the big league when you make a perfect play.
You're in the big league
when you keep the team alive.
You're in the big league
when you block a shot or two.
You're in the big league. You're in the big league chew.
Big league chew. Man-sized wads of great-tasting shredded bubble gum stuffed into a giant Stay Fresh pouch for big league flavor and big league bubbles. It's big league chew.
You're in the big league. You're in the big league chew. Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream. It cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
Why cleans your teeth?
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
Why cleans your teeth?
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
Why cleans your teeth?
Took place in Los Angeles. I guess that's West. We're talking with Western star Don Collier. Don, now you appeared in Perry Mason. Do you recall that one?
That had to be in 1958, I think it was.
Now, that was before you really, before you starred in Outlaws or anything. What did they have you doing there? Do you recall?
Oh, I was a witness to something. It's been so many years, I can't remember.
Well, you weren't the witness that gets proved to be guilty, I hope.
Not
towards the end of the show.
No, I wasn't the perpetrator. I remember being on the witness stand testifying to something.
Did you like that kind of stuff, or did you prefer, like, the westerns and the working outdoors and stuff?
Oh, no, I like the westerns.
Yeah, okay. I've got, you know, while we're getting away from westerns for a moment with the Perry Mason bit, I've got an email from Jeff. Jeff is in Missouri, and he says, I enthusiastically recall the film Safe at Home, 1962, in which right. Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris made special appearances as themselves. He asked Don, could you share recollections about just what kind of individuals they both were, being professional baseball players and not true actors? Were they uncomfortable appearing in their scenes before the camera?
They were very uncomfortable.
Both of them, huh?
That wasn't their bag, though. They were both great guys. I enjoyed being around them. Unfortunately, they had their wives with them down there, and they couldn't really unlimber like I could because mine was home.
where did that take place at?
We shot that in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, okay. As a matter of fact, Jeff, one of his questions, he asked, was Safe at Home actually filmed in Florida where the story supposedly takes place? So the answer to that is yes, it was.
Yeah.
Now, Mickey Mantle, I don't know that Maris was. Mantle in particular, as a matter of fact, the drinking and partying kind of shortened his life, as a matter of fact. But he was quite a partier, but down there while this was going on, he was held in check, huh?
Well, yeah, his wife was with him, and we were out one night. They had Mantle and Maris had their wives with them. Whitey Ford was down there. Do you remember Whitey Ford?
Oh, yeah, he was another partier.
Whitey Ford was there with his wife. I was alone. And there was a friend of Rogers, a union guy from New York, was down there.
And we were sitting at a table ringside at the old Eden Rock Hotel. That was a big hotel in Miami Beach at the time. And Ella Fitzgerald was the headliner there. And we were getting kind of loud at our table down there. You know, they would, in those days, they you bring your own bottle in. As I recall, we brought about five or six jugs in. And they'd bring in the ice cubes in the mix. And we were laughing and screaming. And Ella Fitzgerald walked over right, you know, right next to our table there. And she says, she wasn't very polite. She says, "Well, you guys shut your mouths and let me do my job up here, or I might come down there on the floor and take care of you." We said, "Ma'am, we'll be quiet." And we shut up. She kept saying it, but she sure brought us up short.
Yeah. Good for Ella.
Yeah, okay. I was Mantle, it doesn't surprise me. Roger Maris was always very uncomfortable, and especially in 62 after the big season in 61, he was very shy, and he was never comfortable at all with the press. It surprises me that Mantle also felt uncomfortable in that. They were to appear as themselves in that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Roger was. Well, Mickey was uncomfortable, too. I'll tell you, Mickey Mantle, he was famous in a way that not many people are famous. He appealed to everybody, little kids, old people, you know, men, women. And when we'd go to another ballpark to do a day's work, we'd get out of the cars and walk in, and most of us could walk in. But Mantle, he'd come in, if he was wearing a sweater, by the time he got from the car to the clubhouse, the sleeves would be about 3 feet long, you know, with the kids. And they would just jump on him, and he'd have to start just grabbing them and throwing them off, just to save his life.
Yeah.
And he was always bugged like that.
Yeah.
Being the kind of a guy he was, he didn't handle it that good.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, he just, it just...
Well, I could see how it would certainly be an irritant.
He loved kids, but they just drove him crazy. I mean,
yeah.
They'd drive anybody nuts, just hanging all over you like
yeah.
that.
Did Jeff asks, Don, have you maintained any contact with actor, he says Brian Russell, who portrayed son Hutch Lawton in the film?
Yes, that's right. I never maintained any contact with him. I saw him and his mother at one of these autograph things about five years ago over in... Not in Hollywood, at Universal Studios. And I didn't recognize him or his mother, and she came over and she said, "Do you know us?" And I said, "Ma'am, I'm sorry, but I don't." She says, "This is Brian Russell." My God, he's a 50-some-year-old guy. And I was just dumbfounded, because when I saw him, he was, a young fellow there, about 10, 11 years old.
So he played... But that would be, in this movie, he played your son?
He played my son, yeah.
Okay. That's fun. Well, this is shocking, Don. You didn't recognize your own son over there a few years
later. How soon they forget.
Yeah.
I've got some sons I wished I didn't recognize. Oh, they're all good boys.
Those are usually the real ones.
That's right.
Jeff asked one more. What was William Frawley?
Who was
a regular cast member of My Three Sons, and of course I love Lucy.
Yeah.
What was he like? Did you know him well?
I got to know him down there on that show. He was a wonderful guy. Drank a little too much, but he was wonderful.
Go ahead.
We were in the dugout one day, and he was supposed to mount the stairs and go out in the field and protest, and he couldn't get up the stairs. It was only about two or three steps out there. So Tom Nod came over and says, he said, "Bill, my God," he says, "listen, you got to quit that drinking at night, because if you die, I can't afford to hire another actor to reshoot all these scenes." So Bill says, "All right, Tom," he says, "tonight," he says, "I'll hide that jug at a place where I won't find it." So the next day we get out there, and here he is. He's just, really hungover. And Tom says, "I thought you told me you were going to get rid of the jug." He says, "Well, Tom," he says, "I hid it." He says, "I hid it in the closet, and I locked the door, and then I hid the key." And he says, "The hell it was." He says, "After about a half an hour, I remembered where I hid that key." Now I got in trouble. I won't do it again. But he loved all the old ball players. He'd come down there for training, you know, Joe DiMaggio and Yogi Berra and all those old guys, and Bill Frawley just loved to be around him. In fact, Bill was later on the board of the Angels out in L.A. for years. Loved baseball.
So this was in, so that was in 1962 then, so that was actually, I guess, he about the time he was doing My Three Sons, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is.
No, I see. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when he was doing it.
Well, I had never heard the stories about. I knew that Bill Frawley was an old, you know, vaudeville guy and was really a very talented guy in a lot of ways. But I had never heard about the drinking. I thought you were going to tell me that he locked it in the closet. Only he was inside at the time when he locked it or something. But anyway, that one is as good.
Yeah.
Timmy, you have something you wanted to ask?
Well, he was in one of my favorite movies when I was a little younger with the War Wagon. How was that? Could you tell me a little about that? I mean, you worked with Kirk Douglas and John Wayne.
That was, in fact, John Wayne. I told him later that one of the reasons I went in the Navy was because of all those war pictures he was doing back during the war. You know, you go see those movies, you come out, you think.
I think we all joined because of John Wayne. War.
So I joined the Navy and. Then when I got that War Wagon job, I had a chance to tell old Duke.
How did he take
was
it?
The reason I sure enjoyed working with him. Boy, he was great.
How was Kirk Douglas to work with too?
I didn't care for him.
Really?
No, he was kind of.
But the Duke was a real guy.
Huh? Oh yeah, he'd drink with you and play cards with you and joke with you.
Was he a good horseman? I mean, in real life?
Yeah. Oh, you bet. Yeah, he did most of his own riding, and Chuck Roberson in those days doubled him. And he would, I like to think I went to the John Wayne School of Acting. That is three or four rules that you must adhere to.
And those
show up
are?
On time. Show up on time, know your dialogue, and hang around the camera.
Beautiful.
You do those things and do your job, and you work with John Wayne anytime.
Okay.
I had an email, this relates to it, but Rocky and Brenda from Las Vegas also asked about that. They said, Dom, all the countless films and TV shows you were in, you're the only actor I can think of that's worked with greats like John Wayne, and they mentioned War Wagon. They also mention here Elvis Presley in Paradise, Hawaiian Style.
I worked one scene in that picture. Yeah, he beat me up. Beat me up.
He did?
Yeah, and he pushed me into a pastry dolly, a bunch of cakes and stuff on it.
Was that Paradise, Hawaiian Style, was that actually filmed in Hawaii?
Or that was, but I didn't go over there. I worked at Paramount Studios.
Okay,
I just worked three or four days on that.
So they just they let you get pushed into the pastry cart locally.
Yeah.
Rocky and Brenda say, is there any current actor or actors that you have never worked with that you would like to work with?
No, I've never given that much thought.
Yeah, some of these are interesting questions, but kind of catch you off guard.
Well, Robert Duvall would be a hell of a guy to work with. Tom Selleck. Tom Selleck's another one.
Have you ever met these fellows?
I've met Tom Selleck, yeah. Yeah, in fact, I did a little part on the Sacketts that he did one of the leads in.
Oh, okay.
And I've seen Tom through the
years. Did you have to go to casting calls for these parts, Don, or did they call you?
No, most of them they call me. Then I did a lot of commercials through the 70s and through the 80s. I've got one on that's on TV right now, Pace Picante.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know you were in that one. Is this the one where they're going to, you know, hang the cook or whatever?
This one, the guy is combing his horse's mane with a roller a girl would use on her hair.
Oh, from New York, I bet.
Yeah, he's from New York, and that's what I say. Oh, he gets his sauce from New York City.
Oh, you're the guy. All right.
Yeah.
I've got, Susan says to ask you, Don, about Dub Taylor.
Old Dub. Oh, boy, he was wonderful. He was a good fella. I worked with him on, several movies, and then him and I did a commercial for 8 years called, it was Hubba Bubba Bubblegum.
Oh, I saw some pictures of that. That's, you know, I meant to make a note of that. Tell people about that.
Well, it would be shown on Saturday and Sunday mornings, you know, on the kiddie shows, because we were selling bubble gum. I was the gum fighter.
The gum fighter.
Dub was my sidekick, and we would, anytime there was any trouble, we'd ride in and get the Blueberry Bandit or the... we would out blow bubble gum at them, you know. And it was fun. I went down to Australia about 3 times and did the commercials down there for that gum.
Oh, terrific.
How come they what was the purpose of like having to go all the way to Australia to do that? Was that where the company was headquartered or something?
No, Wrigley's has a big branch down there, and they simply wanted me to be the gum fighter down there.
Oh, okay.
In order to show it on Australian TV, 90% of it has to be filmed there.
Ah, that explains it. Okay.
They could use 10% of something we did here, but the other 90% had to be shot in Australia.
They knew how to get you down there. Incidentally, on your website, there are some pictures of you as the gum fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you weren't going to bring that up. People can go to the Don Collier website and see the old gum fighter. Now, you could blow some pretty good bubbles. Were you really blowing those, or was that just some fake they stuck in your mouth?
I had a stunt blower. I had a hell of a time blowing those bubbles. So Bobby Elliott, he'd be right there with me, and he'd be chewing them up, and he'd blow the bubble. And I tell you, I had to tough it out to take that gum from him and put it in my mouth.
Hey, that's a tough union, gum blowers.
That's right.
Is that a union job? You're the gum blower. Now, you had to tough that out. Was that as bad as sitting in the guy's car, the slob's car or whatever?
The what?
Sitting in the guy's car.
Cameron Mitchell.
Yeah.
Oh, Cam Mitchell's car.
You had some tough assignments in your...
I got to ask, on Death Valley days, were you and Ronald Reagan close?
No, I never met him on Death Valley days. He would do all this stuff, like all the old Rangers did. I don't think they ever came on the sets. They just did their part in the studio, you know.
Oh, okay.
I did about 5 or 6 of those.
I see, yeah. How was that to do? I mean, there were always different stories.
Death Valley days is great. Old Bob Staver produced those all those years, and you know, if you were a little lean, a little hungry at a certain time, you'd make it a point to drop by producer's studio and walk by old Bob's office, you know, and you'd say hello to him. He'd say, "Oh, come on." He knew why you were there. Come on in here. You'd say, "Well, how are you, Bob?" He'd say, "You busy next week?" He'd say, "No." I got a job I want you to do. He knew if you came by, you were looking for a job, you know, and he'd get you to work.
Good story.
Yeah.
Don, I've got emails here from, it's either Jer or it could be Gair. G-E-R is the first name. That could be either Gerhard or Gerald. And he says, what is your favorite television show? Now, I don't know if he means currently or which one you appeared in. So let's say, with what was the favorite of ones that you appeared in?
You mean other than the series I was on?
No, it could be. Include that. No. With High Chaparral?
High Chaparral. Got to be my all-time best job I ever had.
Well, you hit the bullseye there.
Yeah.
All right. What made it the best?
Well, everything, I guess. It was just the scripts were well-written. The crew and the cast and the production. Everybody was great. They treated us right, you know, and... nobody that I ever recall ever had arguments.
Okay, so basically the working environment, and you know, you just touched on something that see, to those of us on the outside of this, is a good script. Obviously, you've probably had to work on programs or in areas that the scripts were less than good. I don't want to phrase this. Don't you feel like you're hurting yourself if a script is bad? Does that reflect upon you as an actor, or do others who see that recognize that it's not you, it's a lousy script?
Well, there's two different points of view. One is, it depends on how hungry you are at the time, whether you take a bad script or not. But if you need the job, you say, "Sure, I'll do it," you know. And the other is, if it's a bad script, you try and make it the best you can. That's all you can do.
You know,
you can't change the thing that much. You just do the best job you can and get it done.
Okay. And so one of the things about High Chaparral was they were good scripts and were well written stories, so that was not a problem.
Yeah, and if you had a problem with the dialogue, you simply talked to Bill Clax or Ken McRae or whoever the director might be, and you worked it out, you know.
Excellent. We're going to take our last time out. When we come back, well, I've got a couple more questions for Don, and we'll get a final word in. So stick around. We'll be right back on Sharevision Radio.
This is the one they're talking about. This is the airborne B-58 Buick. And this is what they're saying.
I like that styling. It's fresh, it's new, it's what I've been hoping for.
They're right. Starting with this new face of fashion, Dynastar Grill. Everything you see announces unmistakably, this is a 1958 Buick. But fresh new styling is only one of the things they're talking about.
There's just one word for Buick's response. Terrific.
They're right. Buick's new flight pitch Dynaflow can switch the pitch a million ways. And coupled with it, Buick's fabulous V12000 engine. You should hear what they say about this.
It's performance. You don't know the meaning of the word till you drive the new Buick.
They're right. Here is the most modern engine it's possible to build for today's highway fuels. And what about that new miracle ride?
It's so smooth, you think the whole world's flat.
And the way that Buick handles, you have to feel it to believe it. This is the one they're talking about. And they're right, all of them. This is the one that looks and feels like flight on wheels. This is the airborne B-58 Buick.
I love Bosco. It's rich in chocolate tea. Chocolate-flavored Bosco is mighty good for me. Mama puts it in my milk for extra energy. Bosco gives me iron and sunshine vitamin D. Oh, I love Bosco. That's the drink for me.
All right, we're back to finish up talking a little television with Don Collier. Waltons, you were on the Waltons as well.
I did one Waltons, yeah.
Did you enjoy that? Well, I guess doing the one, you didn't get a chance to get too well acquainted with people there.
No, just it was a quickie. I'd worked there about 3 or 4 days, and that was it.
Okay. I've got an email from Chicago Bill, and he says, after talking television, he recommends going to, just what we said, www.doncollier.com. Don Collier, all one word. Said Don has a great website. So, Bill, I appreciate you voicing that. I couldn't agree more. It is terrific. I don't know if it's Jerry or Gerhard. Anyway, had two more questions for you, Don. I want to get them in.
Go ahead.
He said, is there any particular scene of the High Chaparral that you would like to do once more, and any scene that you would rather not have done at all?
You know, I think most actors will agree with me. Any scene you do when you, either on your way home or that night thinking about it, you wish you could do it one more time. And that's just about every damn scene you do. You become your own worst critic.
So in other words, you feel you want to do it again, that you could improve upon it.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes you get one that feels real good, but most of you think, geez, I'd sure like to do that one more time.
Well, I think that probably that feeling, you're correct, that a good actor or a successful actor does it, because if you're too easily satisfied with yourself, you really aren't that good.
I think that's true.
What about the part of any scene that you'd rather not have done at all? Anyone in particular you'd just as soon have missed?
No, I can't think of any.
Okay.
When you're in that business to make a living, you take a lot of jobs you probably shouldn't take, but you do it because you got to put beans on the table.
I think that so many of us out here in the audience, you know, just look upon people like yourselves and people that are actors or in show business or in movies or television, have just got a ton of money, and you're just sitting there waiting for, you know, sorting through the offers and seeing, you know, which one you'll take and which one you aren't, and seeing who will outbid one another. And that's not the way it is.
Well, those big shot actors, they can probably do that, but
Well, it's not the norm.
I kind of like to think of myself as a bread and butter actor, which all of us were, Bobby Hoy, myself, and any hundreds of actors who were just bread and butter guys. And you probably took a lot of jobs you wouldn't have taken had you didn't need the money.
Gare asks, which director have you enjoyed working with most? He says up till now. Well, I think that's going to be about most of them, because as Don said, at about 77, there's not going to be a whole lot more down the road.
Well, there's still the voices of The Simpsons he could do.
Okay. What director did you enjoy working with most?
I think Bill Claxton, who did a lot of the High Chaparrales. Bill was great. He knew what he wanted, and he didn't. If you got it in the first take, he'd print it. But he was just a great individual who knew what he was doing, and he got what he wanted.
Tim, did you have anything else here? We got about 2.5 minutes.
I just want to touch on, besides the radio show, Don, are you doing anything else? Are you looking at any scripts or anything?
No.
I know you're in your 70s, but I don't think you're ever going to give up.
Oh, no. I would do something if it came my way. Interviews are just, I'd want to fly over to L.A. every now and then for an interview, so I just stay here, and I enjoy being more. My wife's an ex-Hollywood casting director, and we just live a comfortable, quiet life down here, and if something comes up, I'd do it. If not, we don't worry about it.
Well, that's good. We might see you again.
Yeah.
I know what everybody is really, really hoping for. We've got about 2 minutes left. Broadcast engineer, could we hear track number 2 again, please?
Oh, no.
Finished that
acapella,
but it still was great.
Hugo Friedhofer wrote that.
It's what?
Hugo Friedhofer.
Oh, wrote those lyrics?
Oh, yeah. He wrote the whole thing, music and the lyrics.
God, is he still alive?
No, he's been dead for years.
Oh, boy, otherwise he'd come gunning
for
you.
Yeah, otherwise I'd be dead if he were still around. Susan says, my favorite episode with Don was a beautiful love story with Miriam Cologne, if I'm pronouncing it right. Maybe you can talk about that. It had beautiful music by a fellow named Harry Sukman.
That's right. Yeah, Susie's dad.
Mm-hmm.
He was a wonderful songwriter and composer. And that was my favorite show on High Chaparral.
Okay, so that was an episode of High Chaparral.
Yeah, yeah.
And Miriam Cologne, I'm not familiar with her.
She did a big part in a picture with Marlon Brando called Appaloosa, if you remember that.
I do remember the movie.
Yes. She's a Mexican gal.
Right.
Very pretty. I haven't seen her lately, but she was a pretty big name for a number of years there.
Did your wife, Holly, did she work as casting director in any shows or series that you appeared in?
No, she was a commercial casting director in Hollywood, and I got several commercials out of her office there. But when we moved to Arizona, she did a lot of movies down here, a bunch of them.
Okay.
She did all the local casting down here.
All right. Well, Don, we are out of time, but this has been a fun time. It's been fun for me.
And a terrific time for me, Don.
And great talk to you guys.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed it, because you certainly gave a lot of pleasure and fun to the audience, just as you have through your whole career and are continuing to do so. So I want to stay in touch with you, and I want to find out, I want to get the west of the story.
All right, we're going to work on that and get her going.
All right. You hold on for just 1 second. The rest of you, next week, started at 6 o'clock, Merlin Olsen with Susan McCrae, and then at 7:30, Talking Television with Dave Feist. Randolph Mantooth of Emergency will be the guest. You be here and be a part of it. We'll do it again on Sheravision Radio.